Jyotisham chakramahitam yasmim brahmati kauravya medhyam iva gavam ganaha viravego nimisham jyotisham chakramahitam yasmim brahmati kauravya medhyam iva gavam ganaha gambira vego nimisham yasmim brahmati kauravya medhyam iva gavam ganaha gambira vega.
With great force and speed,
Animisham,
unceasingly,
Jyotisham,
of luminaries,
Chakram,
sphere,
Ahitam,
connected,
Yasmin,
around which,
Brahmati,
encircles,
Kauravya,
Ovidura,
medhyam,
a central pole,
eva,
as,
gavam,
of bulls,
ganaha,
a herd.
Translation,
Saint Maitreya continued,
my dear Vidura,
descendant of Kuru,
as a herd of bulls circumambulates a central pole on their right side,
all the luminaries within the universal sky unceasingly circumambulate the abode of Dhruva Maharaj with great force and speed.
Please repeat.
Saint Maitreya continued.
My dear Vidura,
descendant of Kuru,
as a herd of bulls circumambulates a central pole
on their right side,
all the luminaries within the universal sky
unceasingly circumambulate the abode of Dhruva Maharaj
with great force and speed.
Srila Prabhupada's purport.
Each and every planet within the universe travels at a very high speed.
From a statement in Srimad Bhagavatam, it is understood that even the sun travels 16,000 miles in a second.
And from Brahma Samhita, we understand from the shloka, yat chakshut eva savita sakalagrahanam,
that the sun is considered to be the eye of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda, and it also has a specific orbit within which it circles.
Similarly, all the other planets have their specific orbits.
But together, all of them encircle the pole star, or Dhruva Loka, where Dhruva Maharaj is situated, at the summit of the three worlds.
We can only imagine how highly exalted the actual position of a devotee is,
and certainly we cannot even conceive how exalted is the position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Om Jnana Tamarandasya Gyanandana Shalakaya Chukshud Unmidatam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahiyam Dadati Subhadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapadakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Padijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padang Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitangscha.
He Krishna, Karuna Sindho, Dinabandho, Jagatpate, Gopesha Gopika Kanta, Radha Kanta Namostate, Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi, Radhe Vrindavanishwari, Vishabhanu Sute Devi, Panamami Haribhye. Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha, Kripa Sindhu Bhyehevacha, Patitanam Bhavanebhyo, Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Go Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
So,
I feel very fortunate to be here before all the assembled devotees in New Dwarka and your Lordship's Shri Rukmini Dwarka, Shri Gonataya and Shri Jagannapalate Subhadraji. Thank you for giving me a chance to say a little something on this shloka. This is, of course, near the end of the pastime of Dhruva Maharaj. And it's been quite a story, quite an adventure. We can see this history of Dhruva Maharaj. It has conflict between Dhruva and his father, his mother, his stepmother. And it has a wonderful relation with his own mother, going out on the great adventure into the forest to find God and to get the kingdom even greater than his great-grandfather's. And he meets the great sage Narada Muni, and he practices this incredible austerity and meditation, chanting the holy name. He gets a direct darshan of Vishnu, and then he returns to great relief of his father and the whole kingdom. And then he rules for some time, and then there's this whole episode with his brother getting killed by the yakshas, and how he goes out and he starts killing all the yakshas, and in a sense he kind of loses it a little bit. You know, he starts killing all the yakshas, and then Swayambhuva Manu comes down, his grandfather, and encourages him to be more equipoised and so forth, and he does. And then the whole period after that, I was reviewing how he then rules the kingdom in a wonderful way. You know, how he is the friend of all the praja, the citizens, and he's beloved by all the citizens. And eventually he becomes detached from the whole kingdom and his wives and his wealth and everything else, and he goes back to Bhadarak Ashram and achieves perfection here. This, we're just reading how he's now finally, he's traveling in the plane, he saw his mother behind him, and everything has this wonderful resolution, very happy ending. And truly, this is the only happy ending there can be. You know, in so many stories in the material world, you have fairy tales, or you have novels, or you have even histories, and they try to come to a resolution. You know, and it's very kind of ironic. They saw that he lives happily ever after. You remember that when your parents used to read your fairy tales and they lived happily ever after? But really, you can't live happily ever after in this material world. On none of these planets that is now going around the pole star with all great force, even up to Brahmaloka, the ever after is ultimately death. And whatever you have achieved in this world is taken away from you. But here we find a truly satisfying resolution to this history. He's going back to Godhead from which he never returns. This is the only place. So devotees are really, we're all really aiming for that. We're aiming for a resolution of this great history that we've had in this material world for millions and millions of births. Each one of those births in which we've tried to achieve some measure of security and happiness and pleasure and been defeated every single time. But now, due to our great good fortune, having received the mercy of Srila Prabhupada in the form of his books and his mission and his movement and everything else, the holy name, we have a path to follow to really resolve all of this struggle that we've been going through all these lifetimes. So we should take it very seriously. I wanted to read a little something from the third canto. Since Dhruva is going to the Vaikuntha planets, to his own special Vaikuntha planet within this world, but it is Vaikuntha planet. And just to remind us of what it's like in those Vaikuntha planets, there's a nice chapter 15 called The Description of the Kingdom of God. You may have remembered it from the previous canto, in which the Kumars are going up, and it's just describing how Jaya and Vijaya came down, but they have to describe the kingdom first. And so there's a little description there, and it's very wonderful. It's a few verses. I'll read it to you. And recall, you would be able to recall how wonderful it is in Vaikuntha. So after thus traveling all over the universe, they, the Kumaras, also entered into the spiritual sky, for they were freed from all material contamination. In the spiritual sky, there are spiritual planets known as Vaikunthas, which are the residence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and His pure devotees, and are worshipped by the residents of all the material planets. Forgive me, I'm going to get my light if I can find it again. Anyway, I don't think I'll need it. A bigger type. In the Vaikuntha planets, all the residents are similar in form to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They all engage in devotional service to the Lord without desire for sense gratification. So this is, of course, the kingdom of Dasya Ras, where there's always awe and reverence. Everyone knows who is God and his glories. But they also have the same forms, except for the little Kaustubha gem and the mark of Shivats, which distinguishes the Lord. But everyone is in this mood of service to Vishnu. In the Vaikuntha planets is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the original person and who can be understood through the Vedic literature. He is full of the uncontaminated mode of goodness, Vishuddha Sattva, with no place for passion or ignorance. He contributes religious progress for the devotees. In those Vaikuntha planets, there are many forests which are very auspicious. In those forests, the trees are desire trees, and in all seasons, they are filled with flowers and fruits, because everything in Vaikuntha is spiritual and personal. So these trees and their fruits, they're also serving Vishnu. They're also full of love for him and doing their service. In the Vaikuntha planets, the inhabitants fly in their airplanes, accompanied by their wives and consorts, and eternally sing of the character and activities of the Lord, which are always devoid of inauspicious qualities. Now it describes, you may recall, when he got into this airplane, which is also a Vaikuntha airplane, it described it like a house. You know, you shouldn't visualize it like some kind of, you know, material airplane. And Prabhupada refers in the purport there to Kardama Muni. And when he was flying with Devahuti, he built a whole city as an airplane. Remember? And they went all over the universe and had all this enjoyment. And then they finally came back down. So these airplanes are just airplanes in name only. You know, that's the only word we have. But they're Vimanas. They're special vehicles that are very wonderful. In the Vaikuntha planets, the inhabitants fly in their airplanes, accompanied by their wives and consorts, and eternally sing the character of the Lord, which are always devoid of all inauspicious qualities. While singing the glories of the Lord, they deride even the presence of the blossoming Madhavi flowers, which are fragrant and laden with honey. When the king of bees hums in the high pitch, singing the glories of the Lord, there is a temporary lull in the noise of the pigeon, the cuckoo, the crane, the chakravaka, the swan, the parrot, the partridge, and the peacock. Such transcendental birds stop their own singing simply to hear the glories of the Lord. So these are not ordinary bees. In the Anchalila, it describes Vrindavanam devilata paritam latashtapushpa spurita gabara pushpanita smita maruvratani maruvratasta shuti hari gita. This is a verse from Vidugdha Madhava quoted in Anchalila. And it describes how in Vrindavan, which is, of course, the supreme Vaikuntha planet, there are all these creepers around everywhere. And in the creepers, on the creepers are growing these beautiful flowers. And around those flowers are humming swarms of bumblebees. And what those bees are singing are eclipsing even the hymns of the Vedas. So these bumblebees, you know, are not just humming. They're not just buzzing. They're singing wonderful shlokas and stotras. And even these other birds, who are also very eloquent, they're being silent to listen to this nectar. When the king of the bees, okay, we said that. Although flowering plants like the mandara, the kunda, the karabaka, utpala, champak, arna, punaga, nagakeshara, bakula, lily, and parijata are full of transcendental fragrance, they are still conscious of the austerities performed by Tulsi. For Tulsi is given special preference by the Lord, who garlands himself with Tulsi leaves and also with Tulsi manjaris. And these Tulsi manjaris, we have great experience here because we have such a wonderful opportunity to have Tulsi garlands around Krishna every so often, you'll see. And it has a special fragrance if you put them on, you know. And it's described in the 35th chapter, 10th canto, how these Tulsi manjaris are woven within Krishna's garland, and it is those Tulsi manjaris that attract the bees the most. And they go wild. They start humming and singing, and Krishna takes his flute and responds to the glories that they're singing. So everything is reciprocating here. The inhabitants of Vaikuntha travel in their airplanes made of lapis lazuli, emerald, and gold. Although crowded by their consorts, who have large hips and beautiful smiling faces, they cannot be stimulated to passion by their mirth and beautiful charms. So there's couples there. But they're focused completely on Krishna. And so this atmosphere of service to Krishna and glorification completely eradicates any possibility of kama entering in there. It's all prema. The ladies in Vaikuntha planets are as beautiful as the goddess of fortune herself. Such transcendentally beautiful ladies, their hands playing with lotuses and their leg bangles tinkling, are sometimes seen sweeping the marble walls, which are bedecked at intervals with golden borders, in order to receive the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And some of you may remember this delightful purport, in which Prabhupada says they're sweeping the walls, even though there's hardly any dust on them. Remember that? In fact, there's no dust. But they're performing the service anyway, just to get the grace of Krishna. In other words, they're so eager for service, menial service, that they'll do like that. So next time we're asked to sweep the floor, we should remember that. It's a great opportunity to perform menial service. And we even have some dust that we can get up. The goddesses of fortune worship the Lord in their own gardens by offering tulsi leaves on the coral-paved banks of the transcendental reservoirs of water. While offering worship to the Lord, they can see on the water the reflection of their beautiful faces with raised noses, and it appears that they have become more beautiful because of the Lord's kissing their faces. It is very much regrettable that unfortunate people of this world do not discuss the descriptions of the Vaikuntha planets, but engage in topics which are unworthy to hear and which bewilder one's intelligence. Those who give up the topics of Vaikuntha and take to talk of the material world are thrown into the darkest regions of ignorance. Lord Brahma said, "My dear demigods, the human form of life is of such importance that we also desire to have such life. For in the human form, one can attain perfect religious truth and knowledge. If one in this human form of life does not understand the Supreme Lord and his abode, it is to be understood that he is very much affected by the influence of the external nature." So this is a nice little review of the description of Vaikuntha, where Dhruva Maharaj is heading. And this whole story, it describes how one can only enter into Vaikuntha if he uses his whole life for the benefit of others. This is there, you may remember, a few verses back, which is a great reminder that Krishna consciousness, especially here as we prosecute it in the material world, we have a responsibility to give out that gift of Krishna consciousness that we've been given. And indeed, we cannot be successful in our own practice of Krishna consciousness without having that feeling of that urgency of giving it to others. This is the essence of the Sankirtan movement. So we can see that perfection of the urge to preach, which is really the urge to save others who are drowning in the material world, in Srila Prabhupada. He was certainly perfect in Krishna consciousness, but he was always, and we read now from some of the books that have come out of his the wonderful pastimes before he came to America, in Radha Damodar and other places, where he was so much praying to be empowered to do what seemed impossible. You know, the fact that we're sitting here is absolutely totally a miracle. You want miracles? Just look around you. Look at each of us. The whole existence of this movement is beyond any kind of material calculation. I was thinking recently, because I'm working on the Vyas Puja book, and then so many devotees, they recall, you know, in their gratitude to Prabhupada, how much austerity he performed in order to start this movement and nourish the movement, take care of everybody. You read the letters, you read about Prabhupada's traveling. He was always, just like Mother Yashoda, you know, was always in anxiety for her little child, Krishna. Prabhupada was always in anxiety for his baby, you know, this creation of his, which was the ISKCON movement and everyone in it. And that was his expression of his love and compassion for the whole world, because this is truly the only welfare organization that really can be called by that name. So it was interesting to read how that's a prerequisite for entering Vaikuntha. We read in the Krishna book, or you read in the 10th canto, how Krishna, when he's wandering in the forest with his friends, he glorifies the trees. Remember that? This is, I think, after the stealing of the gopis' garments in that same chapter. There's a little coda there where he's then wandering in the forest, and he glorifies the trees. Pranay arta diya vacha, that the trees are so tolerant, you know, they're so tolerant That's one example that they give. They never complain. The winter, you know, freezing cold, and the summer heat, and the, you know, the woodsman come and chops them down, or people take the fruits, you know, or whatever. But they remain totally generous and munificent. They give their fruits, the flowers, the wood, the bark, the ash, the shade. You imagine all the benefits that come from trees. That's why planting trees is actually a great act of charity. But Krishna says this is the what really every human being should have with his prana, artha, diya, vacha, with his life force, with his wealth, with your intelligence, and with your words. You should do benefit for every other living entity. This is the perfection of life. So this is Krishna's own words. He's telling us that, how much that, you know, in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, did he show the urgency for giving out Krishna consciousness. But especially interesting here is that this is an evidence of being Krishna conscious. You cannot truly be Krishna conscious without feeling the urge to give it to others. It's just like if you get some prasadam, and it's extraordinarily good, you know, some incredible sweet. You know, the real, it's one thing to taste it, but the real taste comes when you give it to others, isn't it? When you say, Prabhu, or, you know, please taste this wonderful sandesh or this wonderful samosa. You know, let me break it in half, or let me get another one and give it to you, you know? So it's that sense of thinking of the benefit of others and giving them Krishna in so many different ways. That is the true hallmark of advancement in devotional service. So, but how to get to that point? That's where the sadhana comes in, sadhana bhakti, because the default position of the living entity in this world is one of selfishness, the ego, the ahankara, that I am the doer and therefore I am the enjoyer, I am the creator, I, and me, aham mameti, right? This is the exact opposite of the mood of sankirtan. Of giving, of sacrificing for the benefit of others. So how to overcome that, that is the whole process of devotional service. And you can see, what is the first stage? To surrender to the Guru, right? Rupa Goswami says, Ado Guvashriya. That's the first of the 64 processes, you know. Beginning, take shelter of a Guru. So what does that mean, you know? It's described in 13th chapter, Amanatvam, Adimbitvam, Ahimsak, Shantara, Achayopasanam. Right there. The first thing is to give up this false pride. We have to realize who we really are, that we're truly these helpless living entities, flailing, as Prabhupada says, flapping for a few days in this world, you know, the body. And then what happens? It's so nice to get older, you know. Most of the material karmis, that's the last thing they would say. No, I don't want to get older. You know, give me some Botox, you know, whatever. Maybe I'll get older, but I don't have to look older, you know. But to get older is to have a perspective on your life. And to see, first of all, how fortunate, you know, you've been to come in contact with Krishna consciousness. But to see how foolish, you know, the attempt at sense gratification is. And you can look back on so many traumas in your life. And you can see how every one of them was a result of trying to enjoy in this world, you know, some relationship, either with another person or with a substance, you know, or with a thing, or something that you develop an attachment for because that's what material life is all about. And then what happens is there's a downside to that. I was just reading this story about how addiction, you know, gambling addiction is growing in America. And this is one of our four regulative principles. And we can see how wise that is, that, you know, gambling is something to be avoided at all costs. It's one of the four regs. Because it's just as addictive as cocaine or some other drug. And now what's happening is because of the internet, of course, you know, it's becoming so accessible. And teenagers in their rooms are gambling away, you know, their whatever money they have, you know, getting addicted. And you remember what it was like to be a teenager, you know? Your senses are on fire, you know? You have a more, and your judgment is not, you don't have so much experience in life, right? So you tend to be impulsive, and they could easily become addicted to something like that. So you look back on that, you know, 10 years down the road, 20 years down the road, oh my God, you know, how much money did I lose? I wrecked my family, I wrecked my life with this addiction, this thing, you know? So this happened. The materialists do that also. But they have no way of getting out of it. It's just pure suffering, or they try to solve it by some other addiction, by some other means. And as Prahlad Maharaj immortally said, dukkha aushadam tatapi dukkam. The aushadi, the remedy for your misery, if it's material, is just a source of more misery. It's an endless cycle. So we've been given this great gift of knowledge and practice. The holy name and the knowledge of how to practice devotional service and what our situation is, all of this knowledge. So we can, if we're fortunate, you know, komara achade pragyo, you begin from very childhood to practice. This was Prahlad's great gift to his classmates. He gave them knowledge. He wasn't speaking as a child, you know, even though he was speaking to children. He was speaking as a great sage. You know, we did a little study of his teachings when I was in Alachua. They wanted me to give a little something, so I did a whole review of his teachings, especially the first section where he speaks to his father. We call it speaking truth to power. Think about it. You know, here is this little child, just like Dhruva, right? Dhruva was also very heroic. Prahlad is a personification of heroism. And he had no qualms of speaking the absolute truth to his father, even though externally it looked like certain death. Right? Here's this fragile little five-year-old, and here's this demon who has taken over the whole universe. He's even subordinated all the demigods except for Brahma and Shiva, and you know those three, Vishnu, Brahma, Shiva, they're the only ones who didn't bow down to him. So what chance did this little boy have? Just see the heroism there. But he kept telling the truth to his father. Until finally his father thought, I have to kill him. He's incorrigible. Right? But he couldn't because he was protected by Krishna. So that in his prayers to Lord Nrisimhadeva after his father is killed, which are very conclusive as well, he has this one verse, which is one of my favorites, how he says, Yasmat priya priya vyoga sa yoga janma shoka agnina sakala yonasa dayamana dukaushadam tatapi dukkama daddiyaham. Bhuman Ramami Vadame Tabadasi Yogam. So he's praying in the Sringanev, and he's giving a little outline of material life. This is what's so wonderful about the Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam is vast. Everywhere you look, everywhere you turn, every page you turn, there's wonderful instruction and description. But it's also true that sometimes one verse can contain, you know, oceans of knowledge. And you know, Prabhupada said that once about Kunti's prayers, Bhave Smin Klishyamananam Avidya Kama Karmavi. He says in a lecture that these two lines encapsulate the whole material world. Bhave smin, in this material world of bhava, of birth and death. Klishyamana anam is full of all kinds of misery. Why? Avidya kama karma bi. Because of ignorance and lust and material action based on those two things. Boom, there's a description. You can write a whole book on that. So similarly, in this verse, Prahlad also encapsulates material life and gives the remedy also. So he says, Yasma priya priya vyoga sa yoga janma shoka agnina sakala yonasa dayamana. That's two lines. He says, Yasman, from these two things, priya apriya vyoga sanyoga. So what is that? It means that which is dear to you. As you live in this world, you become attached to so many things. The body, right? The sense objects, your family members, whatever it is. There's attachments that develop, knots in the heart. So each one of those attachments eventually is frustrated. That very thing that's most dear to you is ripped away from you. Your very body, which is the source of all these attachments, or the medium by which you're engaging, right, is taken away gradually, sucked out. The youth is sucked out by time. This is a statement in Bhagavatam. Who can deny it? The senses, you can't see so well, like Shakespeare said, sans eyes, sans teeth, your liver, right, or Vidura saying your liver is not working, right, to Dhritarashtra. What do you try to enjoy? Some last little remnant? You know, realize the reality. So that's that is what is dear is taken away. And those things which are abominable are pushed upon you, are forced upon you. Old age, disease, death, debt. Debt. This whole country is like $8 trillion in debt. We're broke. This country is broke. And when it comes due, all of this so-called opulence is going to evaporate. You know, debt is a big thing. You have to take care of debt, disease, Prabhupada said right away. We haven't taken care of it. So these things come upon you as a great burden, You know, so many people are burdened by debt. So these things, that which is dear is taken away, that which is abominable or frightening is pushed in your face. So this he describes as a fire of lamentation. Shokagina. And I'm burning, not just one lifetime, and in all different lifetimes. Sakala yonishu dayamana. Human births and other births, the same thing is there. Even the animals, they're looking for what is pleasant, but they can't find it, or they have it, it's taken away, and so forth. So, to try to remedy this misery, we have various means. We call it the duk aushadam. Now, aushadam means a herbal remedy, but it can mean any remedy. So, in order to defend, that's a big one, right? In other words, the greatest thing in this world is the threat against your very life. All the animals, you know, you look at the little insect. He may be eating something, but as soon as you step near him, he run away. More important than the food is the very existence, life. So that's a big one. So we have so many weapons we've developed over millions of years, from the you know the stone hammer that the arrows to the guns to the missiles to the hydrogen bomb and biological weapons. The nefarious Ugra Karma, you know, demons, they always think of new weapons. There's so many weapons we don't even know about. All for the sake of trying to preserve your life. But those weapons cause a big problem. You remember the Cold War? Many of you probably remember the Cold War. That whole Cold War, you know, I wasn't aware of World War II, personally. But there was like what they call a Damocles sword over our head. You know, the sword of Damocles is a sword hanging over your head by a thread. At any time, it could come. The hydrogen bomb can come. I grew up like that. Some of us grew up with that. You know, that's like an all-pervading fear. It was just everywhere. So the very means of your defense becomes the means of terror and frightening and fear. So that's true of everything. You know, the cars. Now, just look at it. We built a society based on cars. Now the gas goes up, up, up. What if you have $4, $5, $6 a gallon? Where's the food going to come from? How are they going to truck everything in if there's no gas? Can we all start raising? I mean, I couldn't raise anything. I don't even know how to grow a flower, what to speak of wheat and, you know. we've become dependent on an artificial system of eating, what to speak of the whole society. All because we want to get from here to there faster, and we invented the internal combustion engine and everything like that. So duk aushadam tadapi dukam. He says the very means of your so-called means of getting rid of the misery becomes more misery, and it's all based on atadhyaham, because I think I'm something I'm not. I think I'm this body, he says. And so what's the solution? That's three lines. He described everything. The misery, the so-called remedy, which is not really a remedy, but just more misery, and the reason for it, and now here's the solution. Bhuman Bhamamit Bharameta Vadasa Yogam. He says, my dear Lord, O great one, Nrisimhadev, he's standing before this wonderful manifestation of God. He says, I who am wandering amongst these different species, please speak to me your Dasa Yogam. In other words, teach me about Bhakti Yoga. Just as Arjun said, please instruct me, I am now your disciple. And as all of us have to come to that point, of the same point. I cannot understand how to solve my problem. I know that my problems are deeper than some superficial thing of how to make more money or how to do this or that. It's a basic intrinsic problem of material life, birth and death and old age and disease. And to solve that problem, I need instruction from the Lord himself or his representative, who's a pure via medium, probably a via medium, or just a medium for his instructions. So this is a point at which we have to come to really every day, because Maya is so strong that you may do it one day or 1 year or 10 years, but then at a certain point you may not feel that urgency anymore. Maya may infect you and think that you can enjoy in this world and that there's some place of security here. So this is why we have to hear. Hearing the Shastra reminds us and teaches us that everything really here is like a phantasmagoria. And that's also in Dhruva. You may remember a few verses back. He saw his whole kingdom and all the things he enjoyed. A king of the world. Everything at his disposal. He saw it all like a dream. No more significant, like a phantasmagoria. Remember, this was his motive for going to the forest, to get that kingdom. which his stepmother had denied him. But now he saw it for what it really was, which was simply a phantasmagoria that he had to walk away from. And that's why he went to Bhadrak Ashram to perform more austerities, to burn out any lingering attachment. So the same principles are here for us. You can't cut any corners. In order to go back to God, you have to be completely attached to Krishna and his service, completely detached from Maya. That's a fact. And so we need to have a plan to get to that point from where we are right now. And we have been given a wonderful process, which is Susukam Kartamavyam. It's actually joyfully performed. The Sankirtan movement, chanting and dancing, prasadam, festivals. You notice how there's always another festival coming up? In Krishna consciousness, this never goes blank, right? There's always something coming up, right? So that's a wonderful thing. We can always be planned. It was Nityananda's appearance day, or now it's Nisringadeva's appearance day, the Prabhupada festival, Rath Yatra. We got to plan for Rath Yatra. And then comes, Janmashtami, Balaram's appearance day, Janmashtami, Radhashtami. There's always something, right? And if it happens not to be a festival day or that, there's the regular daily festival. Prabhupada set it up. Mangal Aarti, the morning program, it's meant to be like that. So in that festive mood, one can be drawn in. And it's glorification of Krishna. It's a joyful process. And you forget yourself. The idea is we have to forget ourselves as separate from Krishna and have our whole identity simply in his service and the service to others in giving them Krishna consciousness. That's the actual teaching of throughout the Bhagavatam. As soon as we start thinking of ourselves, what's in it for me? What do I get? Isn't it? That's not the mood that really takes us out of this material world. It's always the mood of, what's best for Krishna? What's best for my spiritual master? How can I serve the devotees? What can I do to give of myself for the Lord? That's the Vaikuntha mood. And we see it personified here by Dhruva in his 36,000 years of leading his kingdom. And doing everything for his praja, and really giving of himself, and so he was supremely worthy here of having this visitation again from Nanda and Sunanda, bringing the vimana and taking him back to the kingdom of God. So I'd like to stop there. If there are some questions, I also, if I can have just 2 minutes, I wanted to go over the Yashomati Nandan song, since it appears that's now happening regularly. Are we singing that mostly every day? So there is a statement by Prabhupada that we shouldn't sing songs, or no one should sit there and sing a song if the whole community, the rest of the devotees don't know the meaning of the words. So since we're going to sing that song, we have our nice new songbook, each and every song of which has synonyms. So you can all learn the songs. And we'll go over this song and just go over the meanings, which are very simple, really, and so that you can know next time you sing it. But if there are any questions on these points about the class, we can entertain them at this point. Okay. Maybe you'll think of something. So we're going to go over Yashomati Nandana. This is truly a delightful song by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He says, Amala Harinam Amaya Vilasa, one of which meaning is that these pure names of Hari are my vilas. This is my enjoyment, singing these names. Another meaning is they're full of the pastimes of the Lord. So, Yashomati Nandana. What does it mean? Arshada? Yeah. These are just a bunch of names. And of course, the names, by hearing the name, you're meant to, remember a little pastime or form of Krishna. Braja Varanagara. You're going to see and hear several times this word Vara. Now, Vara, we know, Vara means a benediction. We know from the Damodar Ashtaka. But Vara literally means the best. So he uses that. Braja Varanagara, he's the greatest hero, right? The transcendental lover in the land of Braja. So Vara means best, or the greatest hero or lover in the land of Braja. Gokula Ranjana. He delights the whole area of Gokula, Ranjana. And Kana. Kana is like a little nickname. It means beloved, darling, dear. You see? We have darling Krishna. Gopi Paranadhana. Gopi Purana Dhana. Now, if you don't know exactly what it means, think you start at the end of the name. Okay, he's meant to think. Dhana. We know what Dhana is. What is Prema? Dhana. The treasure. Right, the treasure. And Purana here is a different little form of the word Prana, which means life. So he's the wealth of the life of the gopis. Gopi Purana Dhana. The wealth of the lives of the gopis. And Madana Manohara. Now, Hara means to take away. Okay? Mana is mind. So mind taking away and chanting of Madana. Madana is Cupid. So he bewilders Cupid. In other words, he takes away sex desire. Who can attract even the mind of Cupid. That's Madana Manohara. Then Kali Damana Vidhana. Vidhana means to perform. And Damana is, he didn't kill Kaliya, but he chastised him. He subdued him. Right? So Kala, he's the one who performed the of Kaliya. So that's the first shloka, or stanza. And then we have second one. So then he has this little refrain. You see, this is the standard form of these songs you'll find in the CC. If you read the Anchi Lila, there's full of these little songs where Lord Chaitanya will expound on a verse. And then in the second verse, it goes into this Amala Harinam. It begins kind of without the first line. And so, Amala Harinam Amiyavilasa, which here is defined, these pure holy names of the Lord are full of sweet nectarian pastimes. Or it means my pastime, you know, delight is in these names. So, Vipino Purandara. So, you know what a Purandara is? Who can say? Yes? A king. A king or a prince. So he's the monarch of Vipina. Means the gardens or groves of Vrindavana. Vipina Purandara. Navina Nagara Vara. Navina means fresh, ever fresh youth. And Nagara Vara. The best youthful lover. So we had this again, right? Vara Nagara. You remember that? So he's a little repeating here. It's okay. He's the best of lovers. He is always ever youthful in the 12 forests of Vrindavan. Vanshi Vadana. Vadana is mouth and Vanshi is flute. He holds a flute to his mouth. And Suvasa. Vasa is the garments. So Suv simply means beautiful, attractive garments. You know, the wonderful Dukula, the silken yellow, you know. So then we have Brajajana Palana. Now, Pala we know, Gopala. What's a Pala? A protector, right. Here is the Braja Jana Palana. He's the protector of all the people, Jana of Braja. And Asura Kula Nashana. Nashana? Destroy. Of who? The Asura Kulas. So a Kula can be anything. We have the Guru Kula, Asura Kula, Kapi Kula, the community of the monkeys, you know. So here's the Asura Kula, Nashan. Then Nanda Godhana Rakowala. So here we have the word Dhana again. Dhana is wealth of the go. So the real wealth of Vrindavan is the cows. And whose cows? Nanda's. So he's doing something with the wealth of Nanda's cows, and it is Rakowala, which means to protect. He's protecting them or herding them. Right? And then Govinda Madhava. We know those names. Navanita Taskara. So Anita means butter, and it can also mean take. So there's a nice verse, Neetam Navanama Neetam. It says, who took my butter? Who took my fresh butter? Says Krishna. Neetam Navanama Neetam Kenatapit. Who drank my milk? It's another verse I'll share with you sometime. So it's a play on this word Neeta, which means take or butter. So Navanita, fresh butter. And Tuskara, of course, he's a thief. He takes fresh butter. Sundara, very beautiful. Nanda Gopala, the Gopal of Nanda. The coward boy of Nanda. Now the final verse, Yamuna Tatachara. Now this is a word we can remember when we sing Jayarada Madhava. The word Yamuna means of the river Yamuna. The word Yamuna is the word, the river Yamuna in like a nominative form. As you see? So Yamuna Tatachara, Yamuna Tira Banachari also. So Yamuna Tatachara, he moves or walks, but wanders on the tata, the bank of the Yamuna. Yamuna Tatachara. Gopi Vasanahara. The stealer of the vasanas of the gopis. Garments. Then Rasa Rasika. A Rasika is an enjoyer, you know, of what? The Rasa dance. and kripa moya. The phrase moya means filled with, or full of, or even made of. So he's made of mercy. He's filled with, he's overflowing with kripa. Okay, kripa moya, very common name. And then Sri Radha Vallabha. Vallabha means beloved of Radharani. And Vrindavana Nata Vara. Here's that word Vara again. It comes three times here. The best Nata. Who's a Nata? Dancer. And where in Vrindavan? And then again, Bhakti Vinod Ashraya. These names, or rather Krishna, is the ashraya or shelter of Bhakti Vinod. He's signing it. This is where they often sign their songs in the last verse. So try to remember these names, you know. And when I see you during the day, I'll review some of them with you. I get together. All glory to Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.